the term that I always use for Vlade is he's in over his head. And I always thought he just wasn't, this just wasn't for him. It's what we were talking about when we were talking about inexperienced general managers. I think the time of reckoning for Elton Brand is on the way. It may be coming here within the next week and a half. And Vlade's time has come and gone. And yeah, I wonder how often now, outside of agents, do teams steer away from candidates without any, like, not general manager experience. But remember, Vlade had no front office experience. Right. He just, like, appeared like, hey, he's going to run the Sacramento Kings.
Right. And that's the biggest thing, having that experience, being in the front office, seeing how things operate. And while, look, I've said it numerous times before, and I'll continue to say it, I think Vlade got, there were things that he did out there where he learned on the fly, and he got better at certain things, and, you know, it wasn't enough.
Can
to
you give me an
job.
Example? What do you think he did better at?
One thing that he was able to do was he was able to shed contracts. So you could say maybe they shouldn't have those contracts in the first place, but he was able to get rid of those contracts, Trevor Ariza and Dwayne Dedman, and also find the talent to bring in that helped out, whether it's Alex Lynn, Kent Bazemore, that helped out. He don't get credit for the Rashawn Holmes. Rashawn Holmes was out there on the scrap heap.
Okay, I got to go Kanye on you. I'm going to let you finish. But you just gave him credit for shedding two contracts that he signed months earlier.
Yes.
Like, that's a problem. Like, it's like, okay, we're going to reward you. You basically, you spilled the milk, and then you went and got the towel, and you cleaned it up.
So, how many times do we see teams have to stay with those bad contracts because they can't get rid of them? We see it all the time. He was able to get rid of them. The one that he wasn't able to get rid of, and he didn't necessarily get an opportunity to, is the Buddy Hield contract.
Okay, well, I don't think that they've tried to get rid of that one, in all fairness. And can
That's
we
what I'm
speak
saying.
On Rashawn Holmes?
Opportunity.
We need to speak on Rashawn Holmes for a heartbeat. They lucked into him. They didn't go out and make this big, you know, grand plan. Like, you guys won't believe this, but the guy who is ultimately going to be our best player while he's healthy, we're going to go sign him on, like, the 20th day of free agency. It's like, he doesn't get credit for two things. He doesn't get credit for signing Rashawn Holmes because
Why
he didn't go
he
out.
Why doesn't he get credit
there.
For that? Because he signed the deal.
The same reason he does not get credit for drafting De'Aaron Fox.
See, I don't subscribe to that either.
Dude,
he could have picked numerous other players. There was my math might be off, but 55 other guys in that draft he could have drafted. And he went with De'Aaron Fox.
That's an entire but De'Aaron was the guy to take there. The question wasn't whether De'Aaron was going to the question wasn't whether the Kings would take De'Aaron at five. The question was, would De'Aaron make it to five? And the fact that he got to five, like, that was the end of the story. There was literally no one else there that the Sacramento Kings should have even thought about taking when they realized De'Aaron Fox was still going to be on the board.
I agree with you. I thought Fox was the savior for this franchise from the time I saw him going against North Carolina in Las Vegas when he was playing for Kentucky. Him and Malik Monk went off. I understood that, but are we going to act like Dennis Smith Jr. wasn't a thing? Like, people were really clamoring over Dennis Smith Jr.? We going to act like that wasn't a thing?
No, I don't think we are, but was he a bigger thing than Lonzo? Or bigger thing than De'Aaron?
It was a discussion. I think the Kings fans loved De'Aaron because he embraced them through that whole process,
sure,
with Snapchats and things like that. So they fell in love with him. But there was a ton of people saying Dennis Smith Jr. You know what I'm saying? Like, it was out there. So I'm not going to say he found De'Aaron Fox or anything like that. I'm not making that argument. But the argument that he doesn't get credit for De'Aaron Fox, I never subscribe to that. And the Rashawn Holmes thing, I don't subscribe to that either.
Not giving him credit for either one.
Mm.
I'm not. I'm going to need Kings Twitter to hit us too, at D'Lo and Casey. I know they're listening as well because they wanted us to give some love to the Sacramento Kings 1999.
Yeah. Shout out to my man, Kate Flippin, man. He's right.
No, he's not. He's not. We can acknowledge them, but dude, we're talking about the greatest eight seed of all time, the 99 Kings.
They're up there.
The conversation is over.
Up there in the conversation.
The conversation is over. It's Golden State. It's We Believe. There's nothing else to talk about.
So let me ask you this, Damian.
We're not ranking greatest eight seeds. Now, in a week, if what we saw last night holds up true, we can revisit this conversation. But right now, there's one, and it is a platinum statue that can't be melted down into something else. It is. We believe it is Baron Davis. It is Matt Barnes. It's the rest of that crew. Is that Donnie Nelson too?
That was Don Nelson. Yes, it was. Now, let me ask you this: is that Mavericks team beating this Lakers team, or beating that Utah Jazz team in '99? No, that Dallas Mavericks team was not very good. They were like the Seattle Mariners in what was that, 01? That won 116 and got bounced in the first round. They weren't that good.
I disagree. That was a 60-plus win team with the best play. Was Avery Johnson the coach of the year? I got to assume that he was. He had the MVP on that team. And one of the big reasons, wasn't Avery Johnson a protege, if you will, of Donnie Nelson, of Don Nelson? I say Donnie Nelson. I shouldn't say that because that's his son. Wasn't he the protege of Don Nelson? And wasn't the whole belief like, oh, he's got the inside track on how to beat this Dallas Mavericks led, this Avery Johnson led Dallas Mavericks team?
And he played him. Don played him.
Yeah, but I think the credit falls on the shoulders of the Golden State Warriors, and not like it's one of those. It's such a tired sports conversation, but it happens all of the time. Did so and so win the game, or did so and so lose the game? And if we're going to go with that tired sports comparison, the Golden State Warriors won that series.
So you have to win to be considered the best eighth seed, is what I'm getting from you.
Oh yeah.
So that Nuggets team is above the 99 Kings team. If they played in a 7-game series, you would pick that Nuggets team.
Was that a 5-game series?
It was a 5-game series.
Against Seattle?
Yeah. 99 Kings were in a 5-game series as well.
That's tough. That's tough.
One thing about that Nuggets team that I remember is not only did they win that series, but I think they went 7 in the semifinals against Utah. So they kind of kept that going, you know what I'm saying, where the Warriors team got bounced in 6 to the Utah Jazz. The Knicks went to the NBA Finals. So are they the best eighth seed of all time, that Knicks team?
That was the strike-shortened year, right? 99, yeah. That was the strike-shortened year. And the Knicks were the eighth?
They were the eighth.
I keep thinking they were the sixth, but, man, the eighth, I don't know. Do we have to throw 99 out?
Well, then maybe you would want to throw 20 out as well.
Well, okay. All right. Yeah. Boy got a point. Yeah, that's a solid point right there.
Game 4, round 1, We Believe Warriors against the Mavericks. I was up there in the rafters. You know, I got tickets for that game for $10. Game 4 of the NBA playoffs. That's crazy, right? But yeah, $10 tickets. I went there. And it was electric. That was a great team. Baron Davis, Matt Barnes, Steven Jackson, all those guys, phenomenal. I think this Portland Trailblazers team may be the best. I do.
Okay.
And 99 is up there too. 99 Kings are up there.
Okay. You're really getting on the good side of Kings Twitter right now.
Well, I said that Vladdy deserves credit for something. They were coming with pitchforks for me after that.
I don't think Vladdy's not the general manager anymore, so I don't think anybody. You can feel however you want to about him. My opinion on him today is the same as it was 4 years ago when he got the job. I didn't think he was ready for it. I didn't think he was equipped for it. I didn't think he was going to be able to handle it. And here we are.
You're right.
He wasn't. I still have concerns. I have even more concerns after that conversation with Jason Anderson, where he doesn't. Jason Anderson, with all that, you know, he's been reporting lately, doesn't feel like, you know, they've got a search firm. That's great. They've got a list of candidates. That's great. These are all great names to target. But what does that all mean for the Kings when they can't even get the house that they currently have in order?
They're not on the same page, Damian. They're not on the same page.
Can we speak on the 99 Kings for a minute, particularly member of the 99 Kings? J.J. Redick. And you don't see this a ton, but J.J. Redick tweeted something last night to the degree of, you know, how long before you muted this Los Angeles Lakers Portland Trailblazers telecast? And he gave several different options there. And of course, that was the game Chris Webber was the analyst on, and Chris is taking a beating, and rightfully so, for his commentary over the last several years. My thing with Chris, and this is why I was really looking forward to this restart, is I respect Marv Albert's career. I think it's, you know, I think there's a certain point where it's time, and I also think, you know, the play-by-play guy can do a fantastic job of setting up the color analyst to shine. And I don't feel like Marv Albert did that. I felt like, again, let's go with sports analogies here. I thought Chris Webber played down to Marv Albert, who's a little bit past his time. And then listening to last night's telecast, that's not true. Chris Webber just still wasn't very good. But it's not very often that you see particularly active players go at, you know, another. You see it with, you know, guys like who do like First Take shows, and you mentioned Kendrick Perkins once. Like, you know, you see guys go at Kendrick Perkins or Charles Barkley or whatever. But I'm going to pose this question to you, and I want you to think about it for a second.
Okay.
Does the announcing determine whether or not you watch a game? Does the announcing affect how you watch a game? We're going to step out. We're going to come back. We've got Kenny Smith joining us at 1:45. We got One-on-One on the way. We've got the things we love about sports. We've got so much more coming up. It's D'Lo and KC here on Sacramento's number one sports station, ESPN 1320.
D'Lo and KC. D'Lo and KC continues on ESPN 1320.
Keep those tweets coming at D'Lo and KC over there on social media. That's not just Twitter, by the way. That's Instagram as well.
Damien, our guy at Gully Blanchard, he's figured it out. And I think this is 100% the direction the Kings need to go for the general manager search.
Okay, what do we got?
He said it's time to bring back the anonymous, raw general manager and make him the general manager of the Sacramento Kings. And you know what? Round of applause. I agree. Let's go.
It's not the worst idea I've heard. I know non-wrestling fans might not get the reference. And what's the worst thing about that? Did they ever pay that angle off? Like, did we ever find out who the Raw general manager was?
It just disappeared. It just went away.
I read a story this morning. This is actually a big story for WWE. I read that Renee Young is going to leave when her contract expires.
Yeah, I saw that.
That's not like, I mean, it's not really a big surprise because, you know, her husband is, you know, he wrestles for AEW. He's the AEW champion. But I remember when they signed her to her last contract, like they were bidding against ESPN. Like there were a lot of, you know, I don't know how to phrase this right. Like mainstream media outlets like ESPN, Fox Sports that wanted to go after Renee Young, but she went the WWE route instead, and it appears her contract is coming to an end, and she's on her way out. That's a huge loss for the WWE. She's a great announcer, which ties back into what we were talking about. Speaking of announcers, Kenny Smith is going to be joining us here at 1:45, so make sure you're locked in with us. If you're worried you're going to miss it, download the radio.com app and search ESPN 1320. Hit the heart. I can't express this enough. Hitting that heart button is really, really important because that sets us up as your favorite station. You never have to search for us again. Plus, you get push notifications. You'll be alerted when D'Lo and KC go live every single day at 12. We know how life gets in the way. Sometimes you forget. No worries. We will remind you to turn on your radio.com app and not miss a thing. So that's Kenny Smith coming up in 25 minutes. And we were talking about announcing. We were talking about TNT announcing. Chris Webber gets a lot of flack for announcing, and he got some last night from J.J. Redick. It's nothing new. Pretty much every single game Chris Webber calls, his name winds up trending at some point. Is announcing a big deal to you?
See, this is something that I might be in the minority with, because I never understood the fascination with announced teams and how they affect somebody's enjoyment of the game. Like, people get really upset with the announcing, whether it's Chris Webber, Reggie Miller, the Monday Night Football crew. Like, get them out of here. Like, I want to know, has anybody tuned into a game that they really want to see? Blazers, Lakers, 49ers, Seahawks, and they had this announcing team, and you know what? They turned off the game. Not just muted it, because you still get the ratings when you mute it, right? You're still watching the game. Has anybody just said, I'm just sick of this. I'm turning the game off. I don't want to watch this anymore. It's never been that serious to me. But like I said, Damien, I feel like I'm in the minority. Like, people really get up in arms about this.
I like to, if I'm going to invest, you know, a certain amount of hours of my day into a broadcast, I want to be entertained. Not necessarily entertained. Entertainment is fun, but I want to learn something. And I want one or the other. You've got to either entertain me or I've got to learn something. I told you I was, you know, the top of the Lewis Reddick fan club. I'm a huge stand for them. I think for the first time in years, they may have gotten this Monday Night Football crew right. I don't think you need a three-man booth for it, but I'm all for Brian Griese, Lewis Reddick, and I believe it's Steve Levy who's going to be on the call there. I'm all for it. I can learn from Lewis Reddick, and I think Steve Levy is going to be a great driver for that broadcast. With Chris, like, I used to think Chris was good, like, years ago. I used to think was really good because he didn't try to talk over your head. I remember one of the big knocks when Steve Young first went to television was he would talk over your head, and I would listen to Steve Young and not understand what he was talking about. Like, he would be referencing stuff in huddles. Like, you want your analyst to kind of let you in and help you understand why something is taking place. And I thought Chris used to do a fantastic job of doing that. Now, I don't know, like, if he gets in his head too much. I don't know if he pays attention to what's happening on social media. I don't know if he's worried about making that next mistake. Like, there was a point last night where he was talking about the relationship between Carmelo Anthony and LeBron James. And it's a natural storyline, particularly to talk about in the first game. And he's like, yeah, you know, they have this great relationship where it's like, yo, I love you, you're my man, but I'm going to go at you. And, like, even though I love you, and then he pauses and he goes, well, but even if I don't love you, I'm still going to go hard and I'm still going to. And it's like, yo, like, Chris, you just ruined your whole story. Like, you destroyed your whole point. The story was Melo and LeBron. The story wasn't Melo and some other guy. The story wasn't LeBron and some other guy. It was Melo and it was LeBron. And by throwing that one line in there about, well, it doesn't matter if you guys don't know each other, or you're not friends, you're still going to go hard. It's like, Chris, you destroyed your whole, like, you just wasted 30 seconds of our time. Like, you just destroyed the whole story.
So, like, I get that, but I would just laugh at it and be like, Chris, that makes no sense. And it'd be comedy and I'd move on. But people, not saying you, but like people, but, like, get him off the air. I'm muting this because he's saying stuff like, I don't get it.
I can enjoy Chris Webber for stuff like that. And maybe it's me being a homer because I'm a Chris Webber, the basketball player. I'm a Chris Webber, the person fan also. Right. I can't stand Reggie Miller. Get Reggie Miller off of my television. Get him off of my television immediately. I do not enjoy listening to Reggie Miller. I do not find Reggie Miller funny. I do not find any of the remarks that he makes. I don't find any of that. I mean, even the line, oh, who's he talking about? And I feel like he was with Marv Albert at the time. It was something like, I don't remember if it was Lou Williams, so this might not make sense. It was Lou Williams was the, you know, named the best player in the state. And Reggie Miller goes, Lou Williams was named the best player in Chicago? And Marv Albert very calmly goes, nope, Illinois. And it was just like, oh, I was about to say. It's like, oh, Reggie, you are awful at this, dude.
Like, see, I just crack up about that. Like, I want a Reggie Miller out there because I can't, and this is no knock. I love Doris, but I don't want a bunch of Doris Burks. I can't laugh at Doris Burke. I learned from her. Like, I like her, but
Doris,
I just can just
drop
sit
a
back.
Line every now and then. That'll get
she
you like, okay,
she did the KD one the other day. That was pretty good. I like that one, but Reggie is just unintentional comedy. I guess that's what it is. You know what I mean? And I laugh at Reggie often.
She had a line the other, I don't remember what it was. It was something about, we were talking about this. Yeah. I like to be right. And she goes, yeah, ask my ex-husband or something like that. It was like, it was a solid line. And to contradict myself, I got a kick out of Jason Witten. I thought Jason Witten, I actually wondered, like, would he have, if social media didn't exist, would Jason Witten have stayed retired and kept doing Monday Night Football? Did he look at, like, the react? Like, I think he said he was going to pull a rabbit out of a rabbit. Like, he had all sorts of just weird things that he said. And I think there was one time where he kicked himself in the foot. I mean, there was just a number. There's probably a website devoted to things that Jason Witten said in that one season. But it made me laugh. I looked forward to it every week. I look forward to seeing what Chris Webber is going to do when he falls on his face. But at some point, like, Hubie Brown. Hubie Brown is
not. Don't do it. Don't do it.
Hubie Brown is not an exciting listen, but I learn from him, and I will hang on every single word that he says.
I was about to jump through these airwaves. Don't talk about my Uncle Hubie like that.
No chance I'll disrespect Hubie Brown. And another guy who I'm pleasantly surprised by is Stan Van.
Stan, he's really shown up in his bubble, too. Like, he's got Stan on his game in his bubble.
I thought he's done a great job. I've enjoyed it. But I get your point about, you know, turning away. Hit us up at D'Lo and KC on Twitter. Do you turn away from a game? Do you, like, actually turn? So I can answer that question as to if I turn a game off. I do. But, you know, I'm a huge WNBA fan. Mm-hmm. I'm a huge women's college basketball fan. The announcing in both of those leagues as a whole is very, very subpar at best. And there are times where the broadcast can become so frustrating that I'll turn it off. And with an NBA game, sometimes, because I know that we're not going to do an entire segment on the WNBA game last night. I know we're going to mention the Aces. We'll mention the Storm. We'll mention the big stories. We mentioned Angel McCautry earlier. Like, we'll do that. But I also know we're not going to spend, you know, a 40-minute block talking about the WNBA. So I don't really keep it on as background noise, where many times in an NBA game, I know I can make dinner. I know I can do other things. We can work on the rundown, and I can pop my head up if Kevin Harlan reacts to something, or if I know that something is going on. With women's basketball, I can't really do that. So I just find myself turning it off, and it drives me nuts. And I want their announcing with so many women being involved in sports. In sports media now, I'm hoping that the upgrade of announced teams in WNBA and women's college basketball changes. And you know what's amazing, too? We're getting ready to have Kenny Smith on here in about 15 minutes. How praised is that group of Kenny and Charles and Shaq and you know, Ernie leading that whole thing? Meanwhile, the two announcers who take the biggest beatings week after week after week are both on TNT.
Yeah.
Chris, you know, Chris Webber and Reggie Miller are both TNT analysts.
Yeah, like I said, man, it's one of those things that I either really enjoy you or I just kind of gloss over you. You know what I'm saying? It's not. I guess I'm good at blocking out things. You know, when I was growing up, I used to live across the street from a firehouse, so like people would come over the house and the fire engine would come out and they're sounding the horn and stuff like that. And they'd be like, oh my gosh, doesn't that get annoying? And I'd be like, does what get annoying? You know what I'm saying? Like, it was like, I can block stuff out pretty good. So
I live by the airport. I don't hear I don't hear airplanes anymore. The only thing that ever stuns me is when an airplane casts a shadow over the window. Then it's like, yo, what was that? Yo, KC, man, we've got some things to do before Kenny Smith joins us, man. Let's go one-on-one here.
Damian, let's get this one-on-one started with the NBA playoffs. Yesterday, not only did the one-seed Los Angeles Lakers lose to the Portland Trail Blazers, but the one-seed Milwaukee Bucks lost to the Orlando Magic. This was the first time since 2003 that both number one seeds lost game one of the playoffs. And that year, it was the 8th seed Orlando Magic defeating the number one seed Detroit Pistons 99-94. Tracy McGrady had 43 points in that game. And that was the iconic McGrady series where when they were up 3-1, he said, man, it feels good to make it to the second round of the playoffs. Only to not make the second round of the playoffs as they blew that series. blew the 3-1 series lead to the Pistons in 7 games. And then in the Western Conference, that year, the 8th seed Phoenix Suns, led by 26 points from the kid from Coney Island, Stephon Marbury, beat the San Antonio Spurs 96-95 in their game one of that series. If memory serves me correct, I think Marbury banked in a 1-foot runner from 3 from like 35 feet at the buzzer to give Phoenix that win, man. Shout out to my man Starberry. So the question I have for you, Damian, is who is in more trouble, the Lakers or the Bucks?
It's so easy, given the conversation that we have had today, to say it's the Los Angeles Lakers. I'm starting to get a little bit concerned about the Milwaukee Bucks. I think
about
Orlando,
this series?
You and I. Now, I'm looking long term here, and I can answer this in two different ways. Long term, I'm getting really, really concerned about the Milwaukee Bucks because now they've put together a string of bad basketball dating back to before the restart, dating back to before the suspension. And you come back into the restart, and there are moments where they looked, oh my gosh, first game out, they look incredible. It looks like they're going to win the NBA championship. And then it's like, oh, you've got guys kind of coming and going, guys kind of off the floor, still dealing with some nagging issues. This Orlando team, and you and I are both really high on the Orlando Magic. If we're looking for a We Believe comp in terms of a team that is gritty, that will fight, and that will take it to the Milwaukee Bucks, I think Orlando is a pretty solid comparison.
Yeah.
I'm concerned about the Bucks right now. I'm concerned about the Bucks a little bit in this series.
Mm-hmm.
I'm really, really concerned about the Bucks long term.
I am spot on with you. I think for the sake of this question, I'm more concerned about the Lakers in their series. But to your point with the Bucks, one of the things that I saw with them that I didn't like that I mentioned with Anthony Davis is Giannis is not on the block enough. They do this thing where they try to get him a running start going downhill. That's easy to wall up. We saw Toronto do it. Orlando did about the same thing yesterday. And late in games, I just don't think he's on the block enough. I got concerns about Milwaukee in this series a little bit. Lakers more in round one. But like you said, going forward, going up against a Toronto, going up against a Miami, Milwaukee may have some problems on their hands.
It has been a whopping 24 hours since we've talked about baseball's unwritten rules. Maybe you can explain this better to me. I'm interested to get your thoughts. The Giants hit Mike Trout yesterday. And Gabe Kapler, right after the game, we didn't throw at him. Anderson was, I think the word he used was, I think he said he was jumpy or he was giddy. It's like, okay, so you hit their best player. Like, all right, Mike Trout. All right, there's an age-old adage. We're going to protect our best player. So, Kenny, I ask you, is there going to be retribution from the Los Angeles Angels of Anaheim, Orange County, Southern California today against the San Francisco Giants?
Shout out to Tustin, California, too. I got love out in Tustin, California. But I'm going to contradict myself now, Damien, as we turn D'Lo and KC into the Tupac of sports radio here, because there's a bunch of contradictions in our takes sometimes, but nothing is black and white in life. And I feel that the Angels would be more than justified throwing at one of the Giants batters today. And the Giants might have to take it. And when I say throwing at them, there should be no headshots. It should be nothing to hurt nobody. But right in the hip, right in the tailbone, you know, right in the middle of the back, I have no problem with that, because it wasn't that, you know, one got away from Anderson yesterday. He threw one up at Trout's head. That turned heads, no pun intended. And then he threw another one behind him. He clearly had something behind what he was trying to do. And I'm all for settling this in a fair way on the field. You know, unwritten rules and everything like that. You got out of pocket. All right. Kapler did what he was supposed to do, kind of apologized for it to try and calm things down. But yeah, somebody's gonna have to wear that today. I don't have no problem with that. Well, they wear it and then we move on.
Kenny Smith is gonna join us in 10 minutes. Kenny Caraway, you just said yesterday that you're not for this. You're not about throwing the ball at somebody else.
No, you're
not about at pitchers hitting batters.
Unsolicited, right? So, like, if I was Mike Trout, Anderson would have to see me. He'd have to see me because I didn't do nothing to you. There was no need for all that. He would have to see me. But if my guy messed up, if I'm on the Giants, if I'm Yaz, if I'm Mauricio Dubon, I'm like, nah, the dude messed up, man. I might have to wear one tomorrow. And then I'm going to wear one, and then we just going to move on. I'm okay with that.
Isn't this an unwritten rule?
This is an unwritten rule.
Aren't we collectively, vehemently against unwritten rules?
Once again, Tupac, I get around, Brenda's got a baby. Contradictions are made all the time. You know, nothing is black and white. And that's what happens here on D'Lo and KC every now and then. And in this unwritten rule, I'm okay with one of the Giants wearing one.
I'm not.
The Angels want to do that.
I'm not. I never am. But it doesn't matter if you're black or white. Go ahead, Kenny.
Damien, Lane Kiffin made some news. Your boy Lane Kiffin All right, as the Ole Miss football coach says that players whose conferences have decided to postpone fall sports should be free to transfer without penalty. All right, he said this during an appearance on the SEC network on Tuesday. He said, quote, kids are having their schools or their conferences deciding to shut down so they can't play. And a lot of them have a lot of money on the line with the next level, or they just want to play their last year. Damien, does Lane Kiffin have a point here? Should these guys from the Big Ten or the Pac-12 be able to go to another school and another conference, basically free of charge, don't have to sit out, nothing like that?
Absolutely. Absolutely, I believe that they should. And not only do I believe that they should during the current pandemic, I believe that they should be able to every year. You know why? Because I happened to be in Tennessee. I was in Knoxville, Tennessee, 5 miles from the University of Tennessee campus, the day that Lane Kiffin told everybody he was leaving Knoxville and going to the University of Southern California. And he didn't exactly tell everybody. The news leaked. He hastily walked into a quickly called press conference and said, thanks, Knoxville, I'm out. And the reaction from that university, the reaction from the people in Knoxville, you would have thought the world was coming to an end. It was front page news. That was the same day as the earthquake in Haiti. Remember that devastating? Yeah. You think that earthquake in Haiti got top billing over Lane Kiffin, you leaving the University of Tennessee in Knoxville? It absolutely did not. But Lane Kiffin was able to do that, right? Free of charge. Coaches are able to get up and they're able to leave whenever they want to. Why can't a player do it? My bigger issue with this is, though, not it's not, you know, a pandemic or making sure that a guy gets an opportunity to up his draft stock or anything like that. It's the fact that, like, how are three conferences playing and two of them aren't? How have we gotten to a point in this country where we've decided, okay, the SEC is good, the ACC is good, the Big 12 is good, but the Big 10 and the Pac-12, you know, those areas, well, they can't play football there. Or they can't play any fall sports there. How is there not a universal agreement amongst all universities and all schools across the country about what is and is not safe to be happening?
Number one, there's no real leadership. Number two, it goes back to the story that you just told us about Lane Kiffin leaving Knoxville, Tennessee. Do you think that those people in Tennessee, in Tuscaloosa, at the University of Clemson, in those small towns would let them say, oh, yeah, we're not playing football this year? They ain't having it. Down there, it's different. You know it. It's
sure,
different.
Understandable, but Michigan? Ohio State? Like, we're talking about, like, the Big Ten, we're talking about some big boys here.
Yeah.
We're talking about some big schools that are, you know, we're not talking about, you know, with all due respect, you know, the WAC conference, you know what I mean? Like, we're not talking about that. We're talking about Power Five conferences with big, massive football programs. I got to imagine that, you know, Harbaugh every day is campaigning for some way to get this football season played. Yeah. But I think that's my bigger issue. It's something that I don't understand. Something I do understand. And Jesse in the studio, I'm gonna ask you to go ahead and kill the music for this last one, because it's gonna take on a little bit of a different tone as we wrap up our one-on-one segment here and we prepare for Kenny Smith joining us in 5 minutes. Some body cam footage of the incident with Raptors president Masai Ujiri and a Bay Area sheriff's deputy who was working game six of the 2019 NBA Finals was made public yesterday as part of a countersuit by Masai Ujiri and his group after this sheriff sued him. And, well, what's on that body cam footage sure contradicts what we were told happened that night by the Bay Area sheriff spokesperson, who said that Masai Ujiri shoved the deputy and attempted to storm past him and walk on the court. And the footage of what happened that night shows something very different. And unfortunately, Kenny, this is not surprising to neither you or I.
Not at all. And there's not a whole lot to add about this, but I will say this. This is just another example of, you know, Masai Ujiri could have lost his livelihood in a different situation, in a different setting. He could have lost his life. He could have lost his freedom. all because of lies. You know what I'm saying? And you got to keep calling them out. You got to keep showing them, you know, the body cam that shows a contradictory story to the one that's put out there. And I salute Masai Ujiri because, you know, I remember he got a little flustered or whatever the case may be, but that could have gone real bad, real quick. And I would completely understand his frustration, but he kept a level head for the most part. And I got to imagine there was a part of him that was terrified in that moment, terrified. And, you know, I'm just glad the truth is out. The truth is out. And we got to continue to have these truths come out. When the lies are being told first.
His team was on the floor celebrating their NBA championship as this incident was taking place. There's also a wide angle shot that I'd encourage you to head over to Twitter and see. I know it's on my Twitter account. We'll make sure that it gets out at D'Lo and KC as well so you can see it, where you see the entire interaction, not just the body cam footage as he quickly approaches. You see it from Masai Ujiri walking from the tunnel over to that security guard. You see the security guard get up from a seat, and you see how the whole incident plays out from a non-body cam perspective. And I think what Kenny and I, the reason we wanted to bring the story to your attention is this isn't new. And I think that's the thing that frustrates you and I the most is this is regular. It's a day-to-day part of it's a day-to-day part of life in America, particularly when you're a black man, even when you're a well-dressed black man in a suit. And even when you're clearly pulling a credential out of your pocket. But my concern when we see this, and the thing that, and it's great, as you just said, from Masai Ujiri, it's great and all of that. The thing that always hits me the most when we see stuff like this is, well, what happens to the people when there's no body cam footage? Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like, we have body cam footage on the people who, the police officers who murdered Elijah McClain. And it didn't amount to anything.
Right.
The body cams on the three officers who murdered Breonna Taylor, they were just not turned on. So was Masai Ujiri going to be in a constant, their word versus ours for the rest of his life if that body cam footage hadn't come out? Right. You know what I mean? And so I know this is a, this is a deeper rooted issue, but we want to switch gears here. I think Kenny Smith may be ready. Jesse, am I right in that call? Is Kenny Smith ready for us? Kenny Smith, what's going on, man? Happy to have you. Appreciate you joining with us, particularly on short notice here. We want to talk about the Jet Academy coming up that you got virtually. But you got a lot of people talking when you were talking about Steph Curry yesterday and you were talking about Dame Lillard pulling up from range. And can Steph Curry still match that? Where are you right now with the Dame Lillard-Steph Curry comparison?
I mean, whatever magic food that Steph Curry eats to be able to shoot the basketball with at that clip, they're feeding that to Dame Lillard in the bubble. That's what he's eating. And so, without question, I think that he's at that range. But it was so funny last night because as soon as I said that, the tweet comes back from Steph Curry. He's like, Kenny, I love you, but you're tripping right now. You don't think so, I got his attention pretty fast.
I think you got all our attention pretty fast. You're talking about what they're feeding Dame Lillard, and you know the hyperbole comes flying out after games like that. Do you think are the Lakers really in trouble after last night's game?
Well, they were trouble before the game started. Like that's a bad matchup for anyone as an AC. We know if they were healthy, they wouldn't be an AC. You know, this was a team that had a chance to win the Western Conference Finals last year, and without Nurse, and that's when he got hurt. That's when their hopes kind of went down. But Zach Collins back, Nurse is back. With the addition of Carmelo Anthony, Gary Smith Jr. They score the ball easier than any. And the Lakers have trouble scoring the basketball at times. So you put that two formulas together, it's like, oh, man, in trouble.
Kenny, this is KC. The KC stands for Kenny Carraway. I don't know if you remember, Kenny, we got a little history. L.A. Southwest College about 10 years ago, pros versus Joes. You, Chris Mullen, and Isaiah Ryder. Kenny Ice Cold Carraway. I don't know if you remember that one, man. That was probably a blip on your radar.
Say no more, man. I remember, brother. How you doing?
I'm good, man. I'm good. Thanks for coming on D-Lo and KC. We had a question on here not too long ago that goes to kind of what we just talked about with the Lakers. What number one seed is in more trouble right now, the Bucks or the Lakers, in your opinion?
Oh, no, the Lakers. Okay. I don't know what Orlando did, what I would call sustainable income. Mm. That I don't know if they can replicate that, but what Portland did, that's what they do. Right. And they didn't actually play that well last night. So they had a great fourth quarter, but they didn't have a great entire game. So I would say if you had to say who's the most in trouble, I would definitely say the Lakers.
Given how loaded the Eastern Conference is, particularly with the Toronto Raptors, the Boston Celtics, have you seen anything from the Bucks in this restart that might have you concerned, like, long-term? Because I felt like for so long they were the definitive favorite to at least represent the Eastern Conference, but it felt like before the suspension they stumbled a little bit. They haven't looked particularly sharp in the seeding games. And then, of course, you lose game one to the Orlando Magic, and you're looking around going, well, Raptors are still sharp. The Celtics are still sharp. I'm starting to wonder about the Bucks, long-term future, even if they make it past Orlando.
Well, I would say that the ability of what Giannis is able to do and the havoc he's able to cause, that doesn't go away. So regardless of, how it happens, he's going to put his position to be able to win the game. Now you need DiVincenzo. You're going to need Middleton. You're going to need Bledsoe. You're going to need all these guys to contribute, but they don't have to contribute at a high level when he's at a high level. That's why I feel that they're where with the Lakers, when LeBron is contributing at a high level, he still needs other guys to contribute at a high level because he's doing multiple things and not just scoring.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Kenny, one team that, I've kind of dismissed for the last couple of months right now is the Houston Rockets. And I just didn't think that what they were trying to do would be sustainable and work in the playoffs. And I really liked what Oklahoma City had been able to do for their season, and particularly after the All-Star break. After game one, Houston, I got to tip my hat to them. They look great. Obviously, if they're making shots, they'll be hard to beat for anybody. But do you think that in this bubble format where things are a little wacky, no home court, all this other stuff, that you could see Houston making some type of a run to the Western Conference Finals, to the NBA Finals?
Without question. When Russell Westbrook comes back, every night they go, well, we either have the advantage or it's even at these two spots. Every night. I don't know if every team could say that. The Lakers could say that. But then, with maybe LeBron and AD. But then you add in all of the other players that they have around those guys who can win matchups at night. Mm. That's what makes them difficult. Now, are they going to be big enough is going to be the question.
Well, you played for the Rockets, you played for the Kings, two very different stories there. Like, what is your reaction every time you get an update on something that's going on in Sacramento?
Well, I think that's just the league as well. I don't think it's just Sacramento. But I think that at times they've had really good pieces. They've had, a good coach at times. They've had good players at times. They've had a lot of different things, but it's not a singular mission. It's a plural mission. You have to have everyone around. And so every time, I've never seen a continuity of everything matching together, which would allow that to happen. I've seen pieces, but then I go, man, some people do put pineapple on pizza. Okay, that's pretty cool. Like, but some people don't. Like, it's just you got to figure out that mix of how it goes. And I think that's been the biggest issue more than anything. But there's been some hell of a players that's come through there. You know, even when Boogie Cousins even was there when he was in his heyday, he was a heck of a player. He was an all-star. And he was an Olympian, a world team member, but just couldn't get it done.
Kenny the Jet Smith with us here on D'Lo and KC. How's the Jet Academy going to work with, you know, the strange circumstances, the pandemic and all of that? I know you've got something going virtually. How does that shaping out?
Well, that's exactly what it is for. It's for, you know, because of the pandemic and the social distance, and I said, why should kid development stop? So I created the Academy for that mission as well. Got Kemba Walker, Trae Young, Victor Oladipo, Breonna Stewart, Brittany Griner in the WNBA. To be everyone's personal trainer for an hour and a half a day. And then I've added, you know, sessions coming up, how to get a scholarship. I want a dunk session. We're teaching kids explosion and how to get their vertical. Then I have another session with, I just got all the trainers who train the greatest players, who train the Kevin Durant and James Harden and of the world. And they're going to show you what they do with them. And, this is a way to do it in a pandemic and social distancing. You're still homeschooling a lot. You need activity. Parents, kids, this is it. Like, this is the way you get it. You get better by yourself individually. So when your team does come back, you're ready. And it's Jet Academy, it's JetAcademyCamp.com. Again, JetAcademyCamp.com.
Of all those players you just named, Brittany Griner's the best dunker. And it's not even close.
The other thing is, we're doing the rehearsals, right? And, you know, how we're going to film it, blah, blah, blah. And she's the only one dunking. And so I said, because Oladipo was still coming back from injury, so we were like, don't dunk. Trae Young can't dunk, I don't think. So I don't even know if he can. And Kimba. Okay? So every drill, like when she finished her dunk, I said, well, my best dunk is Brittany. I said the exact thing. My best dunk is Brittany Griner. So if you want to see that, if he dunks, he's from Brittany.
Yeah, BG is special, no doubt about it. JetAcademyCamp.com. Check that out, JetAcademyCamp.com. Kenny the Jet Smith, we appreciate you so much, my friend. Best luck the rest of the playoffs.
Thank you.
Hey, Kenny, you got us. I need to get that get back, man. You got us on the Pros vs. Joe, so I'm ready for the get back anytime, man. Come on now.
That was too many years ago. You got
it. Kenny the Jet Smith, again. JetAcademyCamp.com. We appreciate Kenny so much for joining us, man. If you're not familiar with Brittany Griner, man, Brittany's a show. I love Brittany Griner, man. First time I saw her, but she is absolutely something special. Yo, it's funny, you talk about Victor Oladipo coming back from injury, Breonna Stewart coming back from injury, Kemba Walker dealing with a knee injury. Yeah. You got Brittany Griner going to be out there putting on a show, or you're going to have to lower the rim a little bit for Trae Young.
I know, right?
I don't know, Kenny's calmness regarding the Sacramento Kings kind of, it gave me the fuzzies a little bit. It was like, okay.
Like Lauryn Hill said, it can all seem so simple. He made it sound so simple, right? And, you know, I just feel like that they don't have any direction right now, and that bothers me.
And that's the frustrating part, right? He praises the players. He praises the things that have gone on here. But, you know, deep down, you know, being here kind of in the grind with the Sacramento Kings every day, we know they're directionless, you know, and even, you know, Jason Anderson joining us. Well, this is what I was told, and here it is. And if you missed the Jason Anderson interview, download the radio.com app. We do have it in podcast form. A lot of people have been asking Kenny and I about that. But we've got to get out of here on this. Kenny, real quick, we'll save this for tomorrow. There was a great spot on our sister station, 95.7 The Game, with George Kittle and Ric Flair. We're going to hold that off till tomorrow. We're so happy. Yeah, we'll give it its time, man. There's some good stuff there when a guy gets to talk to one of his heroes, man. It's awesome stuff. So we'll have that sound for you tomorrow. Again, if you missed Kenny the Jet Smith, if you missed Jason Anderson talking about the GM search here for the Sacramento Kings, download the radio.com app. You can use the rewind feature for up to 24 hours and listen to the show, and you won't miss a single solitary second of Damon Ratto and Rolski. They are coming up next. Who's Rolski? Anybody know? Is that Kolsky's cosplay? Like, is that who that is?
That might be his PlayStation 4 handle or something like that.
That might be it. Damon Ratto and Kolsky are coming up here next on Sacramento's number one sports station, ESPN 1320.